pop yourself a beer or a cold libation. I can tell you how I wrote this little theme. I went and took a call from brother Jason, and he tells me that he has a little dream. He says he needs a backwards intro to begin his podcast, and I ask him, what you got? He said, I'll start off with some talking and some moody clips of popcorn fighting fantasy explorations and some groundless exploitation. Kickstarts that I'm watching and some blind unboxing, full month horror movie marathon. Sometimes I let the box come on, contest and of course you know it's all about games. That's a slow down, let's just start with the name. It's the Nerds RPG Variety with the other Jason.
Welcome back to the Nerds RPG Variety Cast. I'm your host, Jason. On my continuing series of talking to people about OSR-related topics for OSR October, I have Harrigan on to discuss OSR playstyles. I hope you enjoy. Joining me today to talk about OSR playstyles is Harrigan. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm very well, Jason. Thank you for having me on.
Oh, thank you for joining me. You've been on a number of Discords. You've been on other podcasts. You're a well-known celebrity in certain circles. But I'm feeling a lot of my listeners may not have heard of you. So I guess we should do just a real quick origin story. When did you start playing RPGs? And kind of what's your RPG origin story background?
It'll go way back. And before I do that, I don't think there's any circles that I'm really well known in. I basically play a lot of games like a lot of people do. So yeah. I'm involved in some communities and all that sort of stuff. So my origin story is AD&D 1983 high school. I'll give you the short version. High school, played one or two sessions with somebody and then decided to get the books and run myself. And I ran like a fiend all through high school, kind of like, you know, after school sessions, an hour or two here and there, to what likely amounted to hundreds or thousands of hours of AT&T through high school, something like that. But I rapidly moved on, and we'll probably talk about that as we talk about the OSR, since this is the time frame that a lot of people are sort of aiming for, 70s, maybe first half of the 80s type of thing when they're really talking about OSR. But I moved on to like GURPS and Champions and Call of Cthulhu. In the 90s, I was big into a game called Underground, Heavy Gear, and Jovian Chronicles. In the 2000s, I moved more into like Fate, Barbarian for Lemuria. I'm a big fan of Simon Washburn generally, so his Supers game I played a lot of. And these days, where I've landed today is pretty heavy in the OSR and indie game space. Basically, small press type stuff is what I really like. The part that I didn't mention there, but maybe pertinent to our conversation. So I dumped AD&D in 1988. And you know, for a variety of reasons, I was looking for just a different experience sort of playing. So I didn't get the 2E, 3.5, Pathfinder 4, 5. I don't have any of that in my background. So for that reason, I wasn't super fast to the OSR bandwagon, because I think when Finch and others were really starting to sort of develop some games, Castles and Crusades, Swords and Wizardry, Labyrinth Lord, Osric, those early ones, I was happily playing Fate and some other games at that point. So I didn't really get to the OSR until like the mid-teens, I think, like 2015, 16, something like that. So for that reason, I also missed Google Plus. I missed up the whole blogosphere eruption. So that would be one reason why a lot of your listeners have never heard of me. I was like, who is this guy? Right. So, but I have discovered it now, almost 10 years that I've been into it. So big fan.
I missed a lot of those same things too. I played in the early 80s and started out with the Back of Me, the Mensa Red Box. Quickly, we moved on to AD&D and we played AD&D, but then we found Palladium and other games and we moved on from AD&D before second edition. And I never played those other editions either. I'm currently in a Pathfinder 1 campaign and I played some of these other things since then. But as a kid, I never played the later D&Ds or any of that stuff. The other thing I guess we should mention is you're also a big proponent of play by post, which isn't really OSR related per se, but that's another place that you have a lot of experience. And some of my other listeners are also big into play by post.
Yeah, but, for sure. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I would only say that I think many of your, you know, you've got some listeners who have been around a while, right? And some of the Discords have a variety of people who are in their teens and 20s playing now, all the way up to 50s, 60s and beyond, right? Many of those folks, those older folks, had a break of some kind when they went to college, when they went to the military, when they got a job and had a family, whatever. I never had a break, but what I did was go play by post. Really, it was play by email at the time, but play by post only for almost 20 years from 95 through about actually more than that, almost 25 years through about 2018, 2019. And I'd run the odd game here and there for my kids as they got older. So we had some few things going on at home, but I made like a conscious decision to get back into live gaming around 2019. Started attending cons, and that actually is when I also really opened things up about the types of games that I was open to playing and whatnot. And at this point, I think like you, I'll play virtually anything. There's just tons of stuff out there that's worth playing. So it's wide open. Play by post remains perhaps my favorite way to play role-playing games, which I think maybe is a little more unusual in the wider community. But I've been doing it for so long, and I think I have a pretty good feel for, I can eyeball a system and determine this might have some challenges, Blades in the Dark, if you're going to run this play-by-post. And quite frankly, a lot of lighter OSR games run really well because it's generally a single role and a decision is made. There's not a lot of like banter back and forth between the GM and the player in terms of like, horse trading. What if I do this? Do I get this? Can I invoke this meta currency and that kind of thing? There's not a lot of that going on, but that's in fact, if you're talking about, you know, where I'm known, those are the circles where I'm probably known best, is play by post type stuff.
Yeah. So I guess we should try, I don't want to try to define OSR because that's a quagmire that we would talk for the rest of the podcast on. And then everybody that listens would disagree with us and have different opinions, but generally, for me, and I am curious if you have a different opinion on this, but OSR, typically the way people talk about it, kind of takes in two schools of thought. It takes in the idea of games that are compatible with the old TSR D&D games, or it takes games that are the spiritual successors and are trying to emulate that play style that back in the Google Plus days, Matt Finch and all them, said this is the old school play style. Now, whether that was the actual way we played back in the day, that's debatable. But but these games are trying to kind of invoke that feeling, being whether it's the pathetic aesthetic or the idea of zero to hero or whatever. But we're either trying to be mechanically compatible or we're trying to evoke the feeling of those games, or at least that mythical feeling.
Yes. Yeah, I was going to say, let's not spend an hour debating what it is and what it isn't. I also don't want to go down that path of like, when you see right. it, that kind of thing. I do think there are some pretty clear touchstones. Finch's OSR Primer is great for those who haven't read it, which really, I just glanced at it before we got on here. It's really like rulings over rules, player skill, heroic versus super heroic, and there's no game balance. Mm-hmm. And then hanging off of that is just all this other stuff. And the way I look at it is that the OSR is something a little bit different for everyone. And what either attracts them or repulses them or whatever it might be. I can tell you for me, I think you are like maybe more than anybody I know, and I've listened to your podcast a few times, heavy into nostalgia, right? Of the, whether it's movies or music or the all the games that you have now gone back and bought that you didn't have in the 80s, right? Your big collection. Yep. For me, I do have that nostalgic feeling, but the mechanical experience of those original games is enough in the way for me that I seek different OSR experiences for what I've always called neo-OSR games. Mm-hmm. And Jason Hobbs and I have talked about this before sort of privately around what do we call these games that are not invoking the original OD&D, BX, AD&D, et cetera, right? And it's so much wider now where there's a British OSR as well that it takes all the Warhammer and fighting fantasy stuff and all that. But I will tell you that I do have this, like, the kid in me wants that black and white art. I want that lower level play. I want lower stakes and more personal stories. I don't want balance. I want the characters or the players to have to realize, oh shit, we're in trouble. We should make some smart decisions here rather than, haha, I'll quaff a potion and adjust my girdle of storm giant strength and, you know, and wade forth type of thing. And quite frankly, this gets at what you mentioned a minute ago. Like, this is, we played that way in the 80s too. There was, I mean, Monty Hall campaigns and everything else were a thing, right? So for that reason, I think it's more like an idealized version of that for me, an optimized or idealized version. There are the newer systems that are not drawn straight from OD&D or BX or whatever. I prefer the unified mechanics, simpler rules. I like that they have dangerous magic rather than Vancian magic. I think the newer games also have really interesting random tables. There are incredible modules that have been written for all this stuff. And quite frankly, one of the main reasons that drew me to the OSR in the first place is the ridiculous creativity of the community. I think, you know, there's no peer to the OSR in terms of creativity right now that's just pouring out of all the creators on Itch, on the blogs, on, you know, or on Drive-Thru or whatever you, wherever you pick up your stuff. So there's just this huge, like, it's like a magnet for me. Like, well, you know, what's this person's take on this classic theme of the evil witch in the woods? What have they done with it? That kind of thing, right?
No, I agree 100%. So I was lucky enough to be part of the G Plus days, and you would have loved that because you had such a cross-pollinization in a central spot almost. Because even though we had the blogs and all that, most people, I shouldn't say most people, a lot of the creators were involved in G Plus. And unfortunately, when it shut down, everything scattered and blogs kind of, they slowed down, and they're still out there. Don't get me wrong. Blogsphere is still definitely out there, but podcasts kind of came up. But now people are spread out across a variety of different social media platforms. So there isn't that central clearinghouse where kind of everybody's cross-pollinating and going as much as they did back then, which is a little bit of a shame. But like you mentioned, Itch is now with the doing the game jams and the other things, we see all this creativity still out there. And a number of, even though I mentioned blogs kind of died out a little bit, there's still tons of blogs out there with tons of great information. You know, one of the things that Rob Connolly really pushes with the OSR is the idea of the free sharing of ideas. And I think that's important. We see that spirit. It doesn't say creators can't sell their games, but there's such a sharing of information and giving of different things in the OSR. I think that's very welcoming too, that you can get in and people are like, oh yeah, you can build off my world or use my ideas. And it's all, even if the game systems aren't totally compatible, the ideas are close enough. You can easily pull them into your system and use them. And I think that's huge.
I think that's, you know, from where I sit, that is resulting in the best games on the market for the OSR. Games like Mouse Ritter, which pull from Into the Odd and pull from Glog as well. And they pull from all these incredible innovations that people have put out there. And it's their own patchwork of stuff. I will admit a little bit of frustration. I feel like about 2, 3, 4 years ago, I was kind of on top of the OSR when new stuff was pouring out. There is so much now that I feel like, oh wow, I'm still playing Knave, not all the, and Cairn, not the 20 knockoffs that may have really cool innovations in them, but I don't have time or, you know, energy to go and chase down every little trail. So I kind of have my favorites at this stage. I'm a little less active at mining for the next great thing in the OSR, I'll say that. But yeah, that community spirit that came from the G Plus days, I think it's still there. And, you know, I'm sure you've talked about it on your show before. The OSR has had this issue with bad actors, right? And with some just kind of awful behavior and all that kind of stuff. It feels in some ways like we're around the bend on that. And I think there's so much out there that's positive that you don't have to sort of defend being a lover of the OSR these days. I know also, though, there's lots of people who are like, that's not OSR when I talk about the Black Hack or Cairn or whatever. So I don't know. Everybody's got their perspective, but I definitely think the cross-pollinization of everything is what makes it so great. And I'll tell you one thing I really do like as well is when people credit each other in their books. I love that because that lets you go back and check things like all of, if you know, I'm sure you know Kobayashi, the French creator that uses a lot of Black Hack stuff. He is really good at taking a bunch of other ideas and put them in his game, and he credits them all. So you can go and find all of the different sources that he used, whether it's stuff from like Luca Raic that ends up in his games or stuff from David Black or whomever. Like Flow, for example. I don't know if you know that game, but it's just got all these cool influences in it. I love that stuff.
Yeah, these days, honestly, if a creator wants to consider their game OSR, then that's fine. You know, Matt Finch was in an interview last year where he talked about Mothership being OSR. And, you know, I'm not going to argue with Matt Finch over what OSR is, right? So it's one of those things. I don't think that's a fruitful road to go down anyway. Because the important thing here is to run fun games at home with our group. And so we have all this stuff to pull from. Yeah, I don't see any use in going in the definition wars or any of that. But no, like to do is kind of segue into play style, because that's always been the dual argument for that we're going to leave behind. You know, is OSR about rules or about play style? And I think there are positive things about most of these games that are considered OSR as far as the lighter rules and rules over rulings and all that kind of thing. But generally, these days, play style, I think, and the things you mentioned, like Adam Matt Finch's Primer, are probably the closer thing to uniting all these games in some way or another, whether they're OSR, NSR, you know, whatever. So for people that haven't tried, what are the draws? Why might they want to consider trying one of these games? What are they maybe going to get out of an OSR game that they're not getting out of a more, I don't know, traditional is probably the bad word. I don't know what's a mainstream big company game. Let's say that. What are they maybe going to get? They're not going to. And I haven't played 5e, but you know, one of.
I have played 5e. I just haven't played it in anger. I've never run it. Got the books, handed the books to my son recently, who was going off to college, who has found a 5e group. So I'm like, here you go, you take these. So I certainly know enough. And, you know, the way I look at it, one of the real differences in play is not versus 5e, but actually versus Pathfinder and 3.5, because I think that's what Finch and others were like, sighing about the feat tree and there's a rule for everything and all that. Right. And I think the play on your sheet thing is one of the biggest parts, one of the biggest differences of an OSR play style versus, and there's tons of games where I love to play the sheet. And, you know, and I also use that term loosely, because to me, in PBTA, you can also play your sheet there, because many people are looking at those moves in advance, trying to angle for one. That's playing the sheet just as much as in Pathfinder. You're trying to get into the flanking position so you can activate the feat that will, you know, let you do extra damage or whatever it might be, versus in OSR. And this is one of the linkages I make to play by post, because I think you can take your time in play by post and you can be more descriptive. In OSR games, the GM has got to paint the picture of the scene, because the players are going to interact with it in a non-mechanical way. They're just going to interact with the fiction. I'm going to tell you what's in the room. I'm going to tell you where there's dust and where there's not, tell you how old the chest looks, how many locks are on the chest. And then it's up to the players to not look at their sheet and say, I roll perception or I do this, but instead say, I walk around behind the chest. I lift it up and look what's beneath it. And there's just this interactivity with the environment. And, you know, and that bleeds into the GM better be ready mechanically for how to handle what the player wants to do, because suddenly they may want to do something that doesn't have a rule. And if you're talking about like a white box style game where it's very rules lean, or Into the Odd, or any of those games, there are very few rules at all that are written down. So you have to be ready to sort of kind of in the moment determine, is it a D6 roll? Are they making a save? Is it some kind of a pose check? You know, what are you going to do in the moment type of thing? Some people will create house rules from that, so they are standardized and they have like a normal set of play they can go through for opening doors or listening or whatever it might, whatever mechanic is missing from the game. I actually am much more context sensitive. I far prefer to invent the rule, sort of not invent, but come up with the ruling in real time, based on what's happening in the fiction. But I guess that's the first thing I would say is, you know, it's really not playing your sheet. It's putting yourself in the eyes of your character and understanding the environment you're in. One of the best ways I've heard it described is your sheet doesn't make your player unique. You do, and the things that happen in the fiction do. So the experiences that the character gets and the way you portray them, the character emerges as opposed to having a long backstory and a whole bunch of abilities on their sheet. What would you say? What would you say the main difference is?
No, I think that's probably it. I think you nailed it there. The idea of, and you know, this gets bandied about as player skill, right? is, but I, honestly, you know, that's kind of a nebulous term, but I definitely, I think that's right. And when you're talking about that, it makes me think there was a, there's a really good module out there and I'm brain farting on it. And I kind of don't want to type and look it up, but there's a teaching module out there for like almost to teach GMs how to run OSR games. And it's the, I'm sure you know what it is. It's
Tomb of the Serpent King.
There we go. Tomb of the Serpent King. Thank you. So my question is this, or my following question here, so I don't have to answer yours, is you were recently on Eric Salzwedel's podcast over at the Omega 3D Chicken Coop talking about good games for new GMs. If somebody's new to GMing, what's a good rule set or what's a good thing to run? And it almost sounds like if they're familiar enough with the rules, that Pathfinder might be easier to run than an OSR game. And I don't want to scare people away from running OSR games in that case, but these games with a rule for everything where the GM really is just almost a referee of the rules. But, and that's not fair because that's unfair to Pathfinder GMs. There are great Pathfinder GMs out there that improvise and make things up and do all the things that any other GM does. So I'm not putting Pathfinder down. I'm really enjoying the game that I'm playing of that. But you do bring up an interesting point that the OSR game is probably going to ask a little more of the GM in that need to be able to improvise on the spot and make those rulings on the spot. Any thoughts on that as far as the OSR GM compared to, what these games that evolved to the, you know, because people were worried about bad DMs and they said, Oh, yeah, the DM's making these bad calls and, you know, being bad actors. So we're going to make a rule set that doesn't let them be a bad DM. Right.
And to be clear, like whole branches of gamedom have evolved because of that. Right.
Right.
Trying to avoid that. ogre DM who that is a really hard question to answer, Jason, because I think the OSR ranges from like into the odd, which like kisses you on the cheek and says good luck, right? And there's a page of rules and that's about it. Or you switch over to the more board games and the end papers are the rules. So there's two pages of I forget if it's A4 or A5, I think it's A5 format, like the smaller 6x9 almost format. So not very many rules. And then the books are loaded with like incredible lore and art and vibe and theme and all that kind of stuff. But they don't tell you a whole lot about like getting going. But then you pick up OSE, right? And OSE isn't a game that I would run because I don't want that original D&D experience. I want something that's a bit, to my eye, a bit more refined and a bit more minimal, and I don't know. My point is there's an awful lot of structure and procedures in OSE around time tracking, around searching, around how long it takes to do certain things. So I think the GM does have a fair bit of like support in certain OSR games, right? Contrast that, and I said I wouldn't badmouth like your beloved AD&D, but contrast that with AD&D, where as a young person or an inexperienced person, you have to read all of Gary's texts to decide what you're going to use and what you're not, right? There's a lot there.
The interesting thing about, and I'll fully admit that TSR games are what they are, but they expected, I'm confident in saying this, that Gary and crew expected you to have read the previous editions of those games as they write the new games. So when you played Holmes or you picked up AD&D, he expected you, well, when you pick up OD&D, they expected you to have read Chainmail and know Chainmail. When you picked up AD&D, they expected you to know OD&D. And there are these assumptions built in the rules that if you haven't played the earlier things, that you're kind of left in the dark. And I love AD&D, but it is what it is, right? And they invented the hobby to some degree. And you know, they were writing some of the first games out there. So they get a little bit of a pass on that.
Sure. I think you're right. I do. I am always amused by, I think it's Apple Klein's book that I read recently about the 70s, which at one point, OD&D, Basic, Holmes Basic, and I think, what was the first book? The Monster Manual, I think, that came out?
Yeah.
Those three were on sale at the same time. AD&D, Basic, and OD&D, all on sale. That makes me kind of chuckle. And I think it just makes your point of it. You know, that was a stew that was all coming together at that time. But so removing ourselves from that, back to your original question. I think what I was talking about with Eric around kind of maybe restate the question. Maybe I've lost track of it. you're asking what's easy, whether OSR is easier to run. Okay, I've now got the track back. My point with Eric was that people who were not super experienced with games could pick up certain games that were a little more non-traditional and run with them. And I think those can include either Power by the Apocalypse or Fate or any of the indie style games, the 2400 games, mm-hmm. et cetera. But it also includes a lot of OSR games like Into the Odd and even some of the, I don't know, like GLOG and Black Hack style games where there's just, it's way looser, right? Where you're not looking for a skill. You're just saying, ah, sounds like strength or dexterity. Pick the one you want and roll higher, or I'll tell you which one to roll. And you're interpreting a lot. I think if you are a GM who has run tons and tons and tons of 3.5 or Pathfinder or 5e, you are a little more adrift because you're like, where's the rule for grappling? Like, there isn't one, guys. You just got to do it. Where are the rules for chases? There's not. So either before the session, if you're expecting a chase, cobble something lightweight together, or be ready to just do some opposed checks and tick three boxes, and whoever gets to the three boxes first gets away or catches up. And I think it's that comfort level with doing that sort of winging it that sometimes newer players can actually be okay with. I think maybe the person who's in the toughest spot is the one who's a long-term player and is used to a whole bunch of structure and rules on the player side, suddenly saying, I'm going to run into the odd, and then going, whoa. Well, is there a downtime table? Where's the travel rules? Where's all the, right? All that stuff. That's where it gets harder, I think.
No, I agree with that. And you know, what you mentioned with Gary and with AD&D and where we talked about just a minute ago about the assumptions they made, a lot of these games, especially when you go to Itch, and I'm not picking on Itch. I love Itch. I love the creativity there. I love the community there and be able to support the creators and be able to support them with a larger percentage of the profits than through drive-thru or anything else. But a lot of those games are assuming that you have a pretty big experience base before you jump into those games. A lot of those games are super minimalist, which isn't a bad thing, but they're making a lot of those same kind of assumptions that we see in, well, like AD&D, right?
You run Stay Frosty, and Stay Frosty, he actually gets tired partway through. The author does it. It's like, oh, I'm not going to explain what hit points are. They're just hit points. It's right. That kind of thing. It's pretty funny.
Yeah, which is great. It's just one of those things that and I don't think anybody listens to this podcast is the first podcast they listen to. If it is, well, you know, I'm sorry, reach out to me and and I will point you towards some great, great places to start. But yeah, it is interesting though, when we look at these games, a lot of these games are, there's no question they're written for gamers. And I think that's even more the case with Itch, because that's somewhere you don't just stumble on that without ever hearing of an RPG before. I would assume, you know, where it's not like back when we were, I mean, you know, you remember the days you go to Barnes and Nobles or whatever big bookstore and you'd find, you know, Torg and AD&D and whatever on the shelf there. You'd go to the role-playing section and see what's there. But that was there for the public that didn't know what an RPG was. You know, they'd stumble across these things.
Yeah, the 80s were a weird time. For me, I grew up in the East Coast, Far East Coast in Canada in Halifax, and we had like two game stores that even knew what an RPG was. So it was I think it was the 90s before anything hit like the equivalent of a Barnes & Noble. Where I grew up. So I, you know, for that reason, a whole bunch of things were closed to me because they either were out of print. Like I have some traveler books from some original traveler books, but I never got the base set because the shop I went to, it was a big comic book store, but it had a big gaming section, never carried it, or they didn't carry it after I was aware of what it was. So they probably carried it in 1979 and 80, but by the time 83 rolled around, they never got another traveler box set or like main game back in those little Ziploc bags or whatever they were. So I never got that. So that, you know, there were some doors that were closed to me, and I didn't have the wherewithal at the time to like mail order anything. You know, I just didn't, that wasn't in my, in my sphere, I guess. I was only getting what that shop would bring in. So right. Yeah, I don't know.
You know, you mentioned traveler. It's interesting because although I don't know that anybody really brands Traveler or Cepheus or these things as OSR, to some degree, really we're touching. We're definitely crossing a lot of the same area, because when we see the Cepheus engine, which is basically an offshoot of what Mongoose first edition Traveler, but it takes the old Traveler rules, the 77 Traveler rules, and with Cepheus you have so many offshoots, everything from sword and sorcery to noir detectives to cowboys to you name it. It's kind of done the same thing what we've seen with BX, where everybody makes their own rule sets for BX. We've seen the same thing with the Traveler rules. And
White Box,
a lot of those are thing. Yeah, a lot of them are just as rules light, you know, and have the openings. And so really, we really cross over. And so, folks, if you're out there playing one of these Cepheus things, it's the same kind of thing we're talking about with the OSR stuff, really.
I would go so far as to say, I think the purest form of the OSR is probably the retro clones, right? Yeah. It's probably the games that are literally lifted, Osric, Labyrinth Lord, mm-hmm. OSE, Swords and Wizardry, although, you know, Swords and Wizardry does a fair bit with OD&D, I think. And, you know, probably my favorite of all those, I think you know that retro clones aren't my jam. There is an exception. I kind of like Swords and Wizardry a lot if you exclude the Thief, because I think the Thief brings a lot of, like, baggage with it. But if you get all the way back to White Box and to especially White Box Fantastic Medieval Adventure game, which is a repackaged version of White Box, I ran 30 sessions of that for my son and his girlfriend as their first RPG. And it worked just wonderfully in terms of, like, this very stripped down, basic, four class, simple, classic Western medieval fantasy game with all of the tropes and themes that I loved as a kid. And it all just sort of came to life through that game. I loved it. But my point here is that I think the retro clones are the purest, but I absolutely use a much bigger umbrella for the OSR. And it includes Traveler. It includes Fighting Fantasy, Warhammer. It includes all kinds of stuff. And in fact, Traveler has, as Marvel Superheroes does, both of those games have, like, multiple retro clones. You know, right? James Bond, the 007 game has multiple retro clones that are out there.
Now, yeah, it's amazing when you look out there. And the retro clones came out at the time because of a need. You know, Osric was written so people could write AD&D compatible adventures. That's the whole reason they published that rule set, was to give people a legal way to publish adventures for the games they were still playing back then.
Yeah, it's as much as people complain about the OGL now, right? The OGL allowed all that.
Yeah.
It was the door that opened.
Right. Yeah, it's the history of it's really interesting to look at, but the key, I think, is that there's so many great things out there. Don't be scared to try these new games, whether it's, you know, you can do play by post on the internet, or whether you're doing online gaming with other people you met through Discords or wherever. And folks, if you're listening to this and you're not a member of any of that, reach out. I can, you know, there's a link to the Audio Dungeon Discord in my show notes. You can go to How to RPG YouTube channel, and you can find a link to the BSlandia site or their Discord. There's plenty of places to go where you can find other people to game with. But don't be afraid to hop in some of these games and try them, because you might find that the player skill, this lighter form, where we're not just rolling perception, but we're actually describing what we're doing, might be to your taste.
I would, there's one thing I want to add here. I don't know if you're heading for wrap up or if you have more questions, but are we going to talk about sort of the tone and the different types of OSR games in terms of, let me put it this way. I think one of the things that might put some people off about the OSR is, like, ooh, that's too gonzo. I don't like science fantasy. That's what you call, what did you call the pathetic aesthetic? It's what I call the miserablest OSR, which is my very favorite OSR, honestly. But I think there are very many ways to play OSR games. But I think some people glance at, like, let's take DCC, and they're like, ooh, that looks pretty nutty on the cover. Not for me. Not understanding that there are actually some DCC modules that are actually pretty close to the bone in terms of how they play. And there's all this other OSR that is not wacky or gonzo at all. It's actually very different. So,
no, I think that's a great point. Yeah, let's discuss that. I'll let you take a stab at it. Let's define gonzo.
That's worse than OSR. I mean, you're the Hunter S. Thompson guy. You define gonzo for us. Yeah. It's his word.
Yeah, I think we got an argument about, not an argument. We had a long discussion, and we couldn't come to an agreement in on the Audio Dungeon. I don't know that we can, but so because, you know, where does that line cross between weird fantasy and gonzo fantasy, right? And or science fantasy is pretty easy. It's laser guns and magic mixed together, right? But yeah, it's interesting. And you're right, though. I think the OSR definitely has that reputation of being Troika, of being DCC, yep. Right? And those aren't bad things, but I definitely know people that are hardcore OSR into the retro clones and stuff that don't want to have anything to do with the Gonzo weird fantasy part, that breaks the game for them because they can't take the world seriously if, you know, something weird pops out of every corner.
Yep. So I think I have I don't want to toot my own horn, but I think I have a nuanced way of looking at it. If you ask me my preferences, like what do you want to run? What do you want to play most of all? It is absolutely not Gonzo. It's not even science fantasy. I don't like Expedition to the Barrier Peaks specifically because of those ray guns and spaceships and robots and all that stuff. And I keep running across stuff in like Hyboria or Hyperborea and other places where I'm like, nah, this has those elements that really aren't for me. But the nuance is if I'm playing something short or at a con or a one shot, bring it on. I've played Troika. I love Troika. And Troika is interesting because you actually can suck all the Gonzo out of Troika by simply developing new classes. That's all you have to do. And it can become a very grounded, low magic, medieval type setting. But let me say this. I guess my default is like, I want magic to be weird and mysterious and dangerous. Mm-hmm. I want human centric. And there are lots of OSR games that are human centric. So everyone's a human. What I want is for the fantasy and the mystery and the, you know, all that cool stuff to be discovered, not to be on display on day one. Right. So you have to go into the woods before you can find out what elves are like and, you know, why they haven't left the land like you thought they did. And just all those sort of classic tropes. I will admit I'm a sucker for all that, like dark fae, dark woods, like bring it on. I'll play that all day long, every time. I love it. I am less about we discovered that the at the bottom of the dungeon, we were in a spaceship and we have to pull some levers and it takes off. Right. I'll play that and enjoy it. But it's not really not my jam 100%. I far prefer that die in a ditch, earn your crust style of British OSR, for example. Are you familiar with a game called Rangers of the Middenvale? You know that one?
Yeah.
So that's a knave hack. And that is absolutely like points of light sort of setting. Mm-hmm. Not really a hex crawl, more like a dynamic point crawl, which is kind of cool. But the whole idea is the land is wild and untamed and very dangerous. And there's little villages all over that are not connected all that well. And the rangers keep the pathways clear and go and fight the monsters and go and take care of the problems the villages have. So the whole campaign is this traveling band of rangers going from town to town, righting wrongs. And in some cases, they're acting as like judges about, you know, disputes in the town. So it's not always like fighting monsters type of thing, but it's quite grounded in terms of like on a day-to-day basis, what are you doing? And there's not a lot of like weird fantasy or science fantasy in it. And if you get right down to it, that's my preferred way to go by far. But there's all sorts of cool games out there that take things to the max in terms of the magic and the weird science and all that sort of stuff. And they're totally fun too. I guess the takeaway I would want your listeners to have here is that there's a wide range in between those two. And even DCC, if you lean into the Lankmar side of DCC, yep, that's a totally different, like much more sword and sorcery, classic sword and sorcery sort of way of playing, as opposed to the you know what? I'm going to interrupt myself. This always makes me laugh because I've seen Joe Goodman quoted, like, why do people think DCC is Gonzo? It's not Gonzo. And I'm like, Joe, have you read your spell tables? Have you read your critical hit charts? You know, so there is a certain amount that is baked in that wacky things can happen in the game. Right. And it just sort of does that. If you've got a serious tone going, it can get T-boned by some of the things that come out of the game. Right.
Oh, I agree 100%. I love DCC. It's my preferred D20 fantasy system. But that said, you're right. You know, another game that does that kind of play that you really enjoy, and I know you're aware of this because you talked about it with Eric, but I've been able to play this and I can wholeheartedly agree with you, is I just brain farted.
Beyond the Wall.
Thank you. Is Beyond the Wall. Beyond the Wall is such an amazing game, folks. If you haven't played it or checked it out, it's well worth getting. It's also, like you mentioned with Eric, it's an easy game to pick up and run because it gives the GM so much support. But it gives you a world that you develop with your players. And I know some people like, well, it's a GM's world. Nobody else gets to have any creative input. But there's the way Beyond the Wall does it is so smart. And just because the player says, oh, yeah, I heard this Witches Over the Hills. Well, that might not be exactly what it is. You've heard the rumor, but the GM still is going to determine the specifics of what you're going to find when you do go over that hill.
I think that game is a seriously overlooked gem. I think it's a fantastic game. You know what? It brings up a really, I think, a really cool facet we haven't talked about yet, Jason, which is one of the things that attracts people to OSR games is there is this like uniformity and consistency of setting because the GM is the one who's painting the picture and has control of it, right? Versus the Powered by the Apocalypse games where you are doing things in real time in terms of, I don't know, what bar are you going into and who's the bartender and what's he known for? And I jam on that sometimes. I can do that and have a great time, right? But there are other people where it just completely wrecks their immersion. It wrecks the fact that the world isn't a thing, that it's like it's constantly mutating in front of them. The whole quantum ogre thing, all that sort of stuff comes to the fore. So I do think there's a whole set of players who gravitate to the OSR games because it provides this much more like provide me a very concrete place that I can interact with kind of thing. And what Beyond the Wall does to leverage both of these ideas is it does a bunch of that up front, but then it subtracts it out of the game when you're playing. So you're never going to have the GM say, I don't know, what is the most dangerous monster in this woods and why is it behind you? You're never going to have that. But you will have the players cross-connect who the cool NPCs are in town and why they're afraid of some of them and all that stuff, which I think is just like super, super good for the GM. If they're trying to run a campaign that isn't just module-based, they're trying to look at like what matters to the characters. I liken it to, if you've played Fate characters have aspects on their sheet, right? And the aspects may be along the lines of like son of the intergalactic princess or the best swordsman in the land type of thing. If you look at those aspects in Fate as the GM, they tell you what the player wants to do in the game. They are like a little shorthand for these things would be cool if they happened or if you mess with them. And Beyond the Wall does a little bit of that, but in a less story gamey, immersion breaking way, because it's all in session zero. It's all in that upfront stuff.
Yeah. Great, great game. Highly, highly recommended. Well, we've been talking for coming up on an hour now, and I don't know if we've accomplished anything with this.
I don't know either.
Yeah. But it's been an enjoyable talk. Is there anything that I want to be precious to your time and of our listeners' time? But that said, is there anything that I haven't asked you that I should have asked you? Or is there anything that you were thinking about prior to this conversation that we haven't touched on that you want to talk about?
Well, I had a whole list of like games to go deeply into if we wanted to, but let's not do that. I think, you know, you don't want to make this 2 hours long. We both have things to do in your list. We don't want to torture your listeners. Maybe, you know, you could do a listeners call in. You could react to some of this. I'd be happy to, we react on Discord and interact on Discord and other places. I'd be happy to help answer questions and whatnot. People have specific things, like if they want to know more about like the low magic, low fantasy, dangerous magic games or the super gonzo over the top stuff, you know, what should I look at? I do think there's one thing we didn't get into and let's not crack this out and go deeply, but quite frankly, to me, there are some really great modules that came out of the 80s, right, that I have pretty fond memories for. Against the Cult of the Reptile God, maybe being number one because I love Tim Truman's art so much. I can't say enough about how much art affects me in these games. Like, it just draws me in. And, you know, suddenly it's 1983 or 84 again, right? But that's a great module. I do not like a lot of the other TSR modules of that time. And I would say the just like ridiculous number of great modules that are out now from like the old school essential stuff like Winter's Daughter and that sort of thing to various sandboxes that it's like an adventure, but there's many things to do, like the Secret of the Black Crag, Black Worm of Brandensford, Evils of Ilmire. They all come with like little mini hex crawls type of thing. I would say that creativity we talked about previously around systems is like tenfold for adventures. There's so many cool adventures out there. And I do think in many ways, they've upped the adventure writing community has upped their game from the 80s, and they're just incredible, like random tables and treasure and what's going on in the game. And the idea of factions now that didn't strongly exist in the 80s, I think can really make sandbox play really fun. And that, I guess, you know, I would close with that, I guess, that there's, you know, there's more we can talk about, but we can do a part two if your fans are crying out for two old guys reminiscing and talking about OSR.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I would argue that faction play definitely existed back in the day with different things, but that's a rabbit hole we don't need to go into. What I would say, speaking of factions, is don't get into tribalism about these games. Don't pick a game like I'm an Into the Odd Man and that's all I'm going to play, Spencer. No, I'm kidding with you, Spencer. But don't. There's so many great things out here. And like you mentioned, so many great modules and so many great adventures. And you can take any of these and run them with just about any of these systems. So that you don't have to be a Labyrinth Lord guy, or you don't have to be a DCC woman that only plays DCC, right? You can mix and match these things, and your best enjoyment is going to be coming from being open to looking at all this stuff, because there's so much great stuff out there that don't get sucked into being, you know, certain brands. Stay open-minded.
So we didn't even talk about that. We can just like offhand reference it here. The modularity of all this stuff is kind of ridiculous. The fact it's so compatible. I always chuckle a little bit when someone's like, you know, how do I take this BX adventure and how do I convert it to CNC or to DCC or a Black Hack or whatever? I'm like, do it at the table in real time, because they have an armor class, hit points, and a level, and that's kind of all you need. You know?
Right. There's just so much great stuff out there. Don't be afraid to look at it, because it's a slightly different system than you played. Thank you so much for coming on. I appreciate it. And like Harrigan mentioned, folks, if you have any questions specific to this, call in and I will reach out and get you an answer. But until then, anything you want to plug before we close this?
Nothing specific. I don't, you know, I'm not, I'm too busy with work and family and whatnot to be a creator myself. So I long for retirement when I can actually produce materials for the community and that kind of thing. But, we'll just, you know, I think you probably owe a post in our play-by-post game. So I'll ask you to do that. And then, and beyond there, you know, I'm usually on either the Gamers Plane Discord, which is the play-by-post site that I play on, or the BS Landia Discord that you know Sean Kelly runs. I haunt that place pretty much daily. So if anybody wants to get a hold of me, they can reach me there.
There we go. Yeah, when I retire, I've just got a big stack of games to play. We'll probably get Roost to the table.
There you go.
So okay.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. I hope you have a great October. Take care. Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
I want to thank Harrigan again for coming on the show. I really enjoyed that discussion. And if you have any questions about that or anything else, you can reach out to me. All the ways to contact me are in the show notes. I love getting messages from the listeners. I love putting them on the air and answering your questions or just hearing your thoughts. One thing that Harrigan will probably be involved in is BSRCon 3, which is put on by Sean over at How-To RPG. I'll put a link to How-To RPG in the show notes. Also link to the Omega 3D Chicken Coop, the podcast we referred to during the show. All those links will be in the show notes. I'll put a link to the convention. BSRCon 3 is going to happen in January. It's an online convention, but tickets will open up and game sign-up will open up in November, at least for game submission. So check all that stuff out, and I will be back later in the week. Before I sign off, as always, I want to thank TJ Drennan for the wonderful music, Ray Otis for the wonderful coffee cup clip art. I want to thank you, the listeners. Until next time, be excellent to each other.
Your auntie or a joker by your spouse, but the operator's screaming it's coming from inside the house. What's in the box? What's in the box? What's in the box? What's in the box? Well, the audience is pretty sure he took a pretty head, and the only question left is if I could shoot him dead. Bring on the gore, bring on the gore. I want some more, bring on the gore. Well, the butcher is a dustman and your moil is by the tipper, and I'm assuming that your partner back there in the wood chipper. Don't look away. Zombies are arising and the world's gone to heck. We're living for the dying and we're dying for the train wreck.